This is the State of Things live from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stachow. Thank you. An NPR journalist and an Afghan translator were killed in Afghanistan this week by Taliban forces. David Gilkey and Zabihullah Tamana were traveling in southern Afghanistan when their convoy came under attack. Two other NPR staff were unharmed. David Gilkey is the second American journalist to die in the Afghan conflict. Yesterday, the museum near Washington, D.C., rededicated its memorial to the more than 2,000 journalists who have died while covering news. Reporters and photographers traveling to war-torn regions are constantly balancing the need for the story with the risks to their lives. Jay Price is WUNC's military reporter. He has made a number of trips to Iraq and Afghanistan during the wars there. He spent most of 2013 in Afghanistan and was the bureau chief for the McClatchy News there. Jay Price, welcome back to the State of Things. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here in front of an audience live.
Well, it's great to have you and talk about this. Unfortunately, in these circumstances and the kind of work that you have been doing for years and other war correspondents are still doing. But I want to step back a bit. The U.S. technically handed over responsibility to the Afghan military. We still have a presence there, right? What's the situation there now?
We've still got almost 10,000 troops there. That sounds like a lot, but we had more than 100,000, and we had about 101,000 at the peak. That's a lot more, I think, than people expected us to have at this point when the major part of the pullout began in 2013.
What was the media presence there when you were covering, and as I say, most of 2013, you were in Afghanistan. What was the media presence there at that time?
Well, you have to understand this kind of rotating cast of characters, people coming in and out. There were regulars, and, you know, it seems like probably on the order of about a dozen for what I would call regulars. We all knew each other because there were, believe it or not, social events in Kabul. There was even a bar or two. One of the bartenders had a dotted line tattoo on his neck that said "cut here." Very colorful place, that one. But people would go out, and we would see each other at parties sometimes. You know, one of the NGOs would have a function or something. But I lived in the NPR compound for the last 8 or 9 months that I was there. And so I knew David. He was a friend. And Gilkey is what everybody called him. But you know, we weren't besties, as my daughter says, but when he was around, we'd go out. And he was really, really good. But, you know, it was this kind of rotating cast of characters. There were regulars and there were irregulars. There were people that were just on this side of being a tourist that would show up, you know, with kind of dashing scarves and $30,000 worth of camera equipment. And, you know, clearly were there to just absorb the vibe.
You say he was really, really good. I've been in this business long enough, and not as a reporter, but watching reporters, to understand that there is a kind of DNA that certain kinds of correspondents have. I think legislative reporters who are really good have that, and war reporters have that. What does it mean to be a really, really good conflict correspondent?
Well, in his case, he was an artist, in addition to just being good technically. If you look at his photos, and one I think about in particular, you know, you think about the body of his work. I think a lot of people have talked about that because he was everywhere. You know, this isn't just this kind of homogenous set of shots from Iraq and Afghanistan that all kind of merge in tones of khaki. He was in Haiti. He was in Somalia. He was here, there, and yon. He went everywhere. He had one of the great jobs, I think, in photojournalism, if you didn't mind conflict, and he definitely thrived on travel, conflict, and doing hard work in dangerous places. But he had one of the great jobs in photojournalism because NPR doesn't have many photographers. It's you know, mainly radio, of course. So he got to do the good stories. He got to do the big stories. And if you think about his photos, one in particular has just kind of stuck with me for a while. It's that he took in Haiti in an earthquake, after the earthquake there. It's just this terrible apocalyptic thing with the smoke swirling around and this man carrying a shotgun through the, you know, this pile of rubble that was his house trying to hold off looters. And it's a Mad Max movie in a single frame.
Well, you said if you don't mind the conflict, and yet you must mind, right? I mean, you have to have a mind about your safety and a mind about what's going on and be very mindful. To what extent do you weigh, how do you weigh the dangers and still do your job? What's the calculus in the mind of a reporter?
And I'm not going to speak for Gilkey. We all have our kind of different matrices that we use for kind of arriving at a solution for yes, I will do this story or no, I won't do that story. And I've talked to a few other journalists about this over the years, sometimes when we were in a pretty tight spot or sometimes when we're about to go into one. John Lee Anderson, the New Yorker's war correspondent, he does other kinds of journalism too, but you know, he's this great writer about not war so much as the reasons behind violence, why humans are violent. And that's what really drives him, is hunting that question and poking and prodding at it in its different guises around the world. And I was going into Iraq for the umpteenth time, and he probably was going in for twice, you know, had been in twice as often as I had. And we were in Jordan with using the same fixer, the same person arranging our transit into Iraq. And, you know, we were having breakfast, and I was feeling really guilty because I have a daughter, very young daughter at that point. And I just left. And, you know, if something happens to me, her life is going to be immeasurably worse. In some ways. And, you know, here I was doing this yet again for reasons that were, you know, some of them examined and some of them not examined. John Lee has, I think, three kids. At least one of them was a teenager at the time. And I asked him, John, how do you square this with yourself morally? And he just looked at me and said, well, my kids were raised to understand life isn't something to be frittered away in a cubicle somewhere. And I was like, okay, you know, that's an answer. It's not the answer. Mm-hmm. But as I said, I'm not going to speak for Gilkey, but you have selfish reasons for doing these things as well as altruistic ones.
If you go in with some kind of moral compass and a big question about how we're driven to this kind of behavior or what are the outcomes, how do you protect that sense that we as civilians never involved in conflict might bring to a question like war? Given the fact that people in those zones have, you know, dotted necks and cut here, this kind of grim humor, you can be converted to this sort of violence. How do you keep yourself from going over to it and keeping the fresh eye that we might have as a reader and a listener?
I don't know. I mean, for me, it was just focusing on the stories. And, you know, for me, again, I'm not going to be that person chronicling the history of this in books. That was my competition at the New York Times. Or some of the freelancers rolling in that were there to write for Rolling Stone or whoever that were going to be the poets of the war, as it were. Gilkey was kind of a visual poet. But, you know, for me, I was really, really good at logistics. I might not have been the poet, but I could get the work done. I could get around and get more of the work done. And what I would do is pick stories that maybe the competition wasn't interested in, and one of my areas was kind of designed to get at that exact thing, which is I wanted to know what was happening to the civilians. The civilians took the brunt of it in Afghanistan. They're still taking the brunt of it. The Afghan army is much less interested in where their extra bullets go when they miss than the Americans were. The Taliban were responsible for most of the civilian deaths there. But year in and year out, the ANA, the Afghan National Army, is suffering huge casualties now, which is, you know, one of the things they were down there looking at when this happened. But the civilians always suffered more, and they always suffered. And I wanted to explore how and why, and the same thing in Iraq during the sectarian violence. This terrible way to live, no way to live.
Well, let's talk about the other civilians involved in this. Abuhullah Tamana, the translator and fixer, interpreter. Talk about their, you know, what's in it for them and some of the dangers they face and the complexity of the story for them.
I can deconflict this a little bit. There were four journalists there. There was essentially a producer and a reporter, Tom Bowman, and another vehicle. That vehicle wasn't hit. They went into, it sounds like a complex attack with many forms of weaponry coming in. But everyone there, in some sense, broadly, not for that particular day, they were all taking the same risks. But everyone there took different kinds of risks for different reasons over the course of their career. And these translators, they may not have very many choices to make a living. This translator had children. He had a wife. He had to pay his bills. He had to feed his kids. And there aren't many opportunities in Afghanistan. So it's almost, it's the best shot you've got. And you'll take risks that are bigger than those you might not take otherwise. Photographers like Gilkey took more risks than I did, not just by choice, but if we were out together, if I was out with a photographer, if you think about what they do, they got to stick their heads up. If things are flying through the air, I'm behind something as well as I can be behind it. I'm listening, I'm observing the best I can, but I don't have my head up the whole time. And you don't see those guys carrying those giant lenses you see at NFL games, you know, with the photographers lined up down the sidelines. They're close in and they got short lenses, and they've got to capture that because that's their job.
Jay Price, WUNC military reporter. Jay, thank you so much for your service and for being here today. Just ahead on the State of Things, we're going to talk about a new exhibit that documents the Cone Mill villages. Stay with us on the State of Things.